It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On this program, we regularly check in with members of Iowa's congressional delegation, and we're very pleased to welcome back to our show Senator Charles Grassley, live chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, among many other things in the Senate. Senator Grassley, great to have you with us on this half hour.
Yes, and I think I've been on your program before, and I enjoy being with public radio, so I hope I can answer your questions and elaborate on some of the things you're interested in.
Okay, I have several questions, and I'd like to reach out to our listeners now to let you know. River to River listeners, join our conversation with your question for Senator Charles Grassley, 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. If we could, Senator, let's start with the controversy that has the nation abuzz to have your comment on this. We heard in the top of the hour news that the South Carolina General Assembly is convened at this moment, we think, to take on the governor, their governor's suggestion that the state remove the divisive Confederate battle flag from the statehouse grounds, this in the aftermath of the Charleston Church massacre. Do you have a position on the flag controversy?
Don't really have a position on it, but I think that it's right that they take the flag down. I think that the extent to which I've read that it's offensive to some people from the standpoint of the historical aspects of racism and everything, and if it's a symbol of that, and particularly when the state themselves can make a judgment of what they want to do, I doubt if Congress under our Constitution could pass a law saying they can't fly the flag, but the states have that right, and I'm glad that the flag's coming down, assuming they get the majority votes, and I don't think they'd be bringing it up if they didn't have the votes to do it.
In the private sector, Walmart and Sears, among others, saying they'll no longer sell products with that Confederate emblem. Do you think it's also good that it disappear from our landscape wherever possible, also in the private sector?
Well, as a historian, I think that you got to respect history, and it is part of history. It's a part of a history taking the flag down, you're saying that you want to forget about that part of history, but you don't forget history. And the extent to which private industry is doing it, I assume that it's got more to do with their business interests than it has history or ideological or anything else, because I think that's the decisions that they make. But I think it's a good thing that they're doing it for the same reason I think it's a good thing that the flag's coming down.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, isn't it, that the meaning of this flag seemed to have evolved. I remember growing up, and we grew up roughly in the same neck of the woods in eastern Iowa. I grew up in Cedar Falls. That this symbol's been around for a long time, and you see it. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on how the meaning has evolved to something that has turned into such a controversy?
I think it's very difficult for us particularly in the Midwest and particularly in Iowa, where throughout most of our history, we've been 97% white European, and maybe today because of a lot of immigration we've had in Iowa, we may be 92% or something. It's pretty difficult for us that have had good relationships with minorities throughout our history, to think that the flag is anything other than just an expression of division within our country from the years 1861 to 1865. I think at least that's the way I have to look at it, spending all my life in the state of Iowa and never having lived in the South. But I'm going to take people's word for it who lived in the South and say everything about it, that the evolution of it has brought about remembrances of racism, I'm going to accept their judgment on it.
Mm-hmm. In the wake of the shooting last week, Senator Grassley, in Charleston, Iowa churches are rethinking their security and also asking police for help. The Des Moines Register reporting, for example, two Cedar Rapids churches, unnamed, but have reached out to their city's police department, asking for a review of emergency plans, possibly providing additional active shooter training. Similar conversations happening at Des Moines Faith Missionary Baptist Church. We'll talk to the deacon at that church, also the president of the Des Moines NAACP, in the second half of our program. How much do you share that concern that the members of these churches have for their security now?
Well, if they have a concern about it, then I have to have a concern about it. But I'd also have to say something that at the 50,000-foot level, that what you're talking about would be at the 100-foot level, that this statement I would make not only about potential dangers to churches, what happened in South Carolina, I'd have to say terrorism generally, you know. It's the government's responsibility, both federal, state, and local, to protect their citizens. But there's no way that government itself is going to guarantee 100% risk-free society, or what happened in South Carolina wouldn't have happened. So that's at the 50,000-foot level. At the local level, I would want local police to respond to the needs of the local communities. And if that's their concern, I would want that to be responded to by any local police. Mm-hmm. But I also would want people to be cautious of don't make too big of a thing out of it, that you encourage some nut like what happened down in Charleston that may be roaming the countryside someplace in Iowa or any other state in the nation, so that you have duplicate sorts of crimes. That seems to have happened in some instances, not recently, but throughout our history, that you've had copycat crimes committed because somebody else committed a crime.
Mm-hmm. We've heard gun activists over the last few days say that allowing guns in church could have stopped the killings. Do you agree, and also generally, with the idea that more guns make a safer society?
I have to look at guns from the standpoint of the Second Amendment, which is a part of the Bill of Rights, just like the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment or a lot of other amendments that we give great heedance to. But also, you have to be concerned about public safety, and under the Tenth Amendment of the Constitution, state and local governments have the responsibility of what we call police powers for the health, safety, and, there's some other adjectives you use, but anyway, look out for the people. Now, the issue we have then is to have that proper balance between the public safety of people and the right that people have under the Constitution to defend themselves. I think that there is some evidence. For instance, if you remember the killings of the children in Connecticut here recently, some town near New York City passed legislation, or no, they didn't pass legislation. The local newspaper published the names of people that had right to have guns in their homes, and there was a public uproar because the people that didn't have guns in their homes thought that they were more subject to break in and personal threat, that if people thought they had a gun, they wouldn't be. So you have that sort of outcry that leads me back to the same statement I made, a balance between public safety, protecting the public, and the constitutional right of people to protect themselves.
Let me jump in there, proper balance there. Do you think we have currently achieved the proper balance, or are we out of balance?
I'm glad you jumped in, because that reminds me of one thing that I don't think we've done enough about, and that is the killings that have come as a result of people having mental problems. And I think we have a very important problem there that we have to deal with. Now, presumably, the guy down in South Carolina, there's no indication yet that he had mental problems, but you know of the outstanding examples of the last 5 or 6 years, Colorado, Arizona, Virginia Tech, Connecticut, I don't know how many other places, but all but one of those people were mentally unstable. And consequently, that's a major issue that I would answer your question, that we got to spend a great deal of time on.
Okay. Senator Charles Grassley, my guest, live for this first half hour. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. I want to have you comment briefly because we're on the U.S. Supreme Court decisions we're awaiting, Senator. Any day now, they will issue the latest ruling on, well, the Affordable Care Act and the same-sex marriage decision. Let's take the Affordable Care Act one first of all for your comment. The outcome will determine whether low-income residents are entitled to subsidized health insurance in more than two-thirds of the states. It's estimated that tens of thousands of Iowans would become uninsured if the U.S. Supreme Court repeals the tax credits available under the Affordable Care Act in these federal marketplaces. Do you support a short-term extension of financial assistance in the event that the Supreme Court strikes down these subsidies?
I sure do. And because the people that are getting the help, it's not their fault that the president made what might be an unconstitutional decision that everybody in every state, whether they had a federal exchange or an estate exchange, ought to get the subsidy. And there's plenty of evidence that it was the intent, contrary to what the president did when the Congress passed the law, including the president's own advisors at the time, was that people that had a federal exchange should not get it. So I expect the courts to rule against the president in this particular instance, but that's not the fault of the lower income people that are getting the subsidy, so continue the subsidy. And then, but don't hurt the chances of making needed reforms or changes in Obamacare, including repeal and replacement, or if you want to keep it in place, dramatic changes in that law so that we don't have the government coming between the doctors and the patients, which is a tradition in America, to have that good relationship, and that we keep the promises that we gave people that if you want your health insurance, you can keep it. That promise was broken. You're going to get your premiums reduced by $2,500. That promise was broken. Those are things that Congress has to fix in the future.
Mm-hmm. So would you support, should the Supreme Court rule against the president in this case, a quick congressional fix to change that one-clause wording that has been the problem in this case?
I would fix it the way your first question put it, a change for an extension for a two-year period of time.
Okay. 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk to Senator Charles Grassley. Let's take the other, before we go to any calls, let's go to the other Supreme Court case pending a decision here on same-sex marriage. The justices of the High Court deciding whether gays and lesbians have a constitutional right to marry or whether state bans against same-sex marriage can stay in place. Senator Grassley, you have always supported the definition of marriage as being between one man and one woman. Do you see your attitude evolving as it has for so many Americans?
Well, it evolves this way, that when the court makes a constitutional decision, whether you agree with it or not, and there's a lot of Supreme Court decisions I disagree with, a lot that I agree with, they're the law of the land.
So your personal view does not enter into it at all?
No.
Would you share your personal view? Do you feel
my
that
my personal view is as you expressed it?
Okay, and you do not see that that evolving. Many Iowans, Americans, we see this in the polls, have changed their minds on this as they've come to know gay and lesbian couples in their communities. Do you, Senator, have gay and lesbian couples in your close circle of friends?
I have hired many people that you would refer to as gay, and I didn't hire them because they were gay, and I didn't care whether they were gay, and they've worked out to very, very good employees and had very good relationships with them, and probably it was even a time after they left my staff that I found out what their orientation was, and we've had good relationships ever since.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe this court case is about discrimination?
Whatever the courts say is the basis for their decision, I'm accepting.
Okay, but is it boiled down to discrimination as the central idea here?
I assume that if they rule in favor of gay marriages and state laws against gay marriages violating the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. It's a case based upon discrimination.
Let's talk about avian flu having affected farmers here. You are yourself a farmer. Senator Grassley, more than 40 million birds have been depopulated due to the impact of avian flu. Big implications for Iowa's economy, Iowa's egg, turkey producers. You've called for a hearing in the Senate Agriculture Committee to talk about this federal response to the outbreak. I believe that's scheduled for early July. And also wrote a letter to the Agriculture Secretary, Tom Vilsack. What are your biggest areas of concern regarding the response, the federal response to avian flu?
I think three. One would be it seems like it takes people making decisions a long time to make decisions, is what I hear from egg producers. Secondly, a lot of paperwork, and maybe those first two things are tied together. I'm not sure that I can separate them, but I usually speak of them separately. And the third one is whether the composting of dead chickens is adequate to stop the spread of the flu. Now, obviously, I mean, the virus. Obviously, burning, I think, and burying, there's no question. But the third one of composting, and I think most of the dead birds are composted as opposed to being incinerated or buried. There's a lot of questions raised about whether that's being done right or if it should even be done that way. There's one other factor that I should mention that's a little separate from what I just said, and money available for making sure that we do the inspections and the repopulation and everything. And so far, as long as it doesn't exceed $400 million, I believe I've been satisfied by Secretary Vilsack that there is enough money available. But if there isn't, then we're probably going to have an emergency appropriation.
5 minutes left with Senator Charles Grassley. Rob, one of our listeners, Senator, tweets this. The Congressional Budget Office found that the Affordable Care Act decreases the deficit. If the Supreme Court upholds the ACA exchanges, will you stop fighting it? Asks Rob.
No, I believe that there's some things that are wrong with it, and evidence of some things wrong with it. The president has made 38 changes in it by executive action. One of these now will be this court decision. And so if the president who signed a bill that he thought was such good policy, and if it's a perfect piece of legislation, why have 38 changes made? And then why would that preclude, according to what Rob is asking, that maybe there might be some future changes to be made?
So the president acknowledged from the very beginning that there will be changes made? It's a huge comprehensive law, right?
Well, I suppose if you follow what Pelosi said, we don't know what's in it. Let's pass it and find out what's in it. But isn't that a poor way to produce legislation?
David is joining us from Fairfield on the line. Hello, David.
Hello. Hello, Senator.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I'm concerned about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I know that you support.
Yes.
Or I've understood.
Well, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm not interrupting you, but I want to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you won't even know what's in it until maybe 6 or 8 months after we pass this legislation that gives the president the authority to negotiate it. So
yes,
you're,
exactly.
I think you're really talking about the Trade Partnership Act, aren't you?
Well,
Trade Promotion Act, I think. But go ahead. Let me listen to your question.
Sure. Actually, you brought up one of my concerns about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is that it is being conducted in secret, and it seems to me that it is important enough that it be discussed more publicly and given different parties a chance to weigh in. That's one of my concerns.
Let me answer that concern before you go on,
sure.
Because the United States is not going to tell 11 other countries what our negotiating position is. If you were negotiating a union contract, you wouldn't tell what your position is because you don't want to negotiate in public. Now, as far as the secrecy is concerned, the Trade Promotion Authority legislation that we're passing says that it has to be made public on the internet 30 days before Congress considers it. So when it's all said and done, there won't be any secrecy. Now your next question.
Okay, that's helpful. Although 30 days is a pretty short, you know, pretty narrow window, I would think. But I'm glad to hear that. The other concern is that my understanding is from aspects of the TPP that have been leaked is that it will give it has the potential to give large international corporations a lot of control over the way governments in the member countries conduct business and the kinds of foods that will be allowed and that kind of thing. And okay. That concerns me a great deal, and I would think that it would also concern members of Congress such as yourself.
David, thank you for the question. Senator, we have about a minute before we have to go.
Okay. Well, I think what he's talking about is that there is some provisions that have been in free trade agreements for a long, long period of time that has an arbitration process for settling some disputes involving various corporate interests, most often associated with intellectual property and things of that nature that maybe he's talking about that we've had some debate on through the Trade Promotion Authority law. Beyond what he's talking about could come out of the Trans-Partnership Act or the agreement. We're going to have a chance to look at all that, and if it's not in the interest of the United States to go along with it, we don't have to approve it in the Congress of the United States.
Okay, before you go, very quickly, you already said in the case of Obamacare, you said how you thought the Supreme Court would rule as a chairman of the Judiciary Committee. What do you think about the same-sex marriage case that we're expected to find out about in the coming days?
I think that we're going to be in a position just like we are Roe v. Wade, that it's going to be something for both political and intellectual discussion for the next 40 years.
So this will not end anything, no matter what the decision?
I don't think so, but I could be wrong. But we thought the same thing when Roe v. Wade was done in 1973, I believe.
Okay. We want to thank you very much for your time, Senator Charles Grassley. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Coming up in the second half hour of our program, we'll have Arnold Woods, Jr. He's deacon at Faith Missionary Baptist Church and the Des Moines leader of the NAACP. Also, African-American academic, a scholar, Richard Brent Turner, will talk about the discussions that the massacre at the South Carolina church has sparked and perhaps the need for more security at churches when we return. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.